Hello and welcome to part two of our A-10 basketball preseason podcast. Today we will look into the Southeast, the state of New York, and out into the Midwest as we preview Davidson, George Washington, St. Bonaventure, Fordham, and St. Louis, a group that contains the two finalists from last year's conference tournament and the two seed. Pretty good group, and I'm excited for today's episode. I hope that you guys are too. For those joining us for the first time, I am Tyler, and I am joined by my co-host, Matt.
Yeah, one more week closer to the season. We're starting to hear a little bit about some preseason secret scrimmages that aren't really secret because the scores get leaked. Sometimes you get a box score, but we're getting closer to the real deal. And before we get into the previews, just a little bit of breaking news for the A-10 since our last podcast. The A-10 and Mountain West announced their matchups for the 2020 season in the inaugural A-10 Mountain West Challenge. So a couple good games out there. UNLV's coming to VCU, Davidson against Utah State, and then Dayton versus Nevada. Those are kind of the biggest ones. Now my question, and a lot of people were talking about this, why are we scheduling these games a year in advance? Because that makes no sense, and I can't really think of a reason why. I mean, I'm excited for the challenge, but that part makes no sense to me.
It was just stupid. Like, there were certainly some criticisms on Twitter. I think people were being a little too nice about it. I think it's stupid that teams schedule these football games years and years in advance because you have no idea what teams are going to look like. But in college basketball, where most schedules are set in the summer before, this is just dumb. It's not like you're trying to prevent Nevada from scheduling a game on that day. All of these teams know what weekend it's going to be. They all know that they're obligated to be involved. So you don't have to worry about them booking other games in that spot. So hold on and wait. I looked at that schedule, and obviously there's multiple A-10 teams not included because the Mountain West is a smaller conference. Ironically, the Mountain West just didn't include San Jose State, who is a disgrace to mid-major college basketball in basically the same way Fordham is. So it's 10 games, and of the four A-10 teams left out, one of them was UMass, who, if their freshmen turn out to be what they're supposed to be, could actually be really good next year. And all of a sudden, it's going to look really dumb that they're not involved in this.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. And I am glad you brought up San Jose State. They make Fordham look pretty good sometimes. But yeah, excited for the challenge. I think it's good for both conferences because we need to keep scheduling good games and give mid-majors a chance to get quality wins. And I understand, like, giving out a save the date, like, making sure these teams keep that weekend open. But, yeah, I mean, out of the six teams I mentioned earlier that I thought those were the best games, with how much turnover there is in college basketball, there's a good shot that at least one of those teams might just suck by then. You just never know. So much changes from year to year. And I just don't know what the conferences were trying to accomplish here.
Everything we've learned in the past few years of college basketball scheduling is that you don't do things ahead of time. You look at the Pac-12, which determined their, like, who played who twice every year on a rotation basis. And you would end up in situations where, let's say, for example, Oregon and Arizona were the class of the Pac-12 in the same year. They play each other once. And it just doesn't make any sense, but that's how the rotation decided it. And the Pac-12, like the A-10, is trying to deal with a universe in which the conferences at the top continue to get better and better. So I don't understand why you're committing to anything ahead of time when the lesson we keep learning is you need to look at who are the best teams and how do we get the best teams to play each other as much as possible. And it goes back to the fact that, like, Dayton and Davidson only play each other once this year, and it's just stupid. I don't know who's running the scheduling for this conference. They're not doing a good job of it.
Yeah, that part's tough because you want to keep it fair and balanced, but also you want your teams to be represented in the postseason. I don't know if the A-10's been doing the best job of that. I mean, obviously not last year, although I don't think it was the schedule maker's fault by any means. But yeah, that is something to pay attention to, especially nowadays where you see a lot of conferences moving into 20-game conference schedules. That just gives everybody fewer chances in the non-conference to make a statement and build a resume. So I think eventually the A-10 might move there. I mean, pretty much all the power conferences, if they haven't already, they will be soon. And that's just something to worry about. It's getting tougher and tougher to get a good non-conference schedule.
So, yeah, and that just backs up the whole not doing it in advance, because if Dayton turns out to be good but Nevada's not, then you're wasting a chance for Dayton to play a better team. And that's the whole point of this.
Yeah, exactly. We want to see our teams play good competition, have some exciting games before the season. And speaking of exciting games before the season, I mentioned the secret scrimmages earlier. Just before we get into the preview, I had a couple of other things I wanted to banter about. So I saw Rhode Island knocked off Boston College in a secret scrimmage by, I think, like 7 points. And that was without Cyril Langevin, who was injured. So good start for the Rams. I'm assuming Langevin's injury isn't serious because we haven't heard anything. And then one other secret scrimmage that I just thought was hilarious. Marquette beat Indiana by 3 points. Guess who got a technical foul in a secret scrimmage?
Not Archie.
Oh, no, it was Archie all the way. I don't know how that happens, but I love it. I mean, I guess that's what you want in a coach. You want a competitor, although maybe it cost them the game. They only lost by 3.
I feel like for that to happen, you have to throw a chair.
Well, he wouldn't be the first one from Indiana, so it's possible.
I only say that because in all my years reffing small children in intramural games, the only time I ever gave out a technical was when someone threw a chair. So I think that the same rules would apply for a secret scrimmage.
Yeah, the only other thing I can think of that's comparable, I remember a couple years ago, Wichita State went overseas, and in one of their scrimmages, Greg Marshall just went nuts, and he got tossed from the game. I just can't imagine that. Like, what are they trying to do right now? I mean, these games, I didn't even know they had referees at some of these secret scrimmages, but I guess they do, and I guess they... Maybe it's like an ump show in baseball. Maybe the refs are just making it about them and they're trying to keep it interesting, because it can't be that exciting to officiate a secret scrimmage. Although, that doesn't make sense either, because usually the refs try to put on a show for the fans, and if there's no one there, I don't even know.
Rothstein's there.
I guess so. I don't know. Just interesting stuff, and it makes me even more excited to see Archie get a real technical foul this year.
So with that, we'll go into our second part of our conference previews. And just like last pod when we started with VCU, we will be starting with the class of this episode, the Davidson Wildcats, coming off of a season where they went 24-10 overall, 14-4 in the A-10, finished as the 2 seed, which seems like a good general range for their performance this season. They lose Nathan Ekwu and Dusan Kovacevic, and they have an interesting group of incoming freshmen, most notably Hyunjung Lee, who was part of the NBA Academy in South Korea. He's a skinny 6'7 guy who could potentially give them some depth at the power forward spot.
So Davidson has been getting quite a bit of preseason buzz. Not quite as much as VCU, although I have seen them in a couple preseason top 25 lists. I think it's fair to say they bring back the best starting backcourt in the A-10. John Axel Goodmanson and Kelvin Grady were both first teamers in the A-10, well-deserved. I mean, John Axel, I actually want to say I'm proud of the way we called this one last year. We both had him as a breakout candidate, and he was amazing. I mean, there were some other good players in the A-10, but he was the clear-cut winner of the Player of the Year award. And then Grady, although some people thought he took a step back last year, he was still Davidson's leading scorer. So those two guys, I mean, they're about as good as it gets in the A-10. The real question is, how much depth does Davidson have? Because they played a very thin rotation last year, and there were times where they couldn't get very many contributions from other guys outside their 2 stars.
Yeah, and the guys who did contribute are all back. Luka Brajcevic, Luke Frampton, Keyshawn Pritchett, Carter Collins. those were the four key role guys for Davidson. And they lose their two backup big men, which will hurt if they just flat out can't replace either of them. But if they find a replacement among their young players, then they're going to be a better team. I really think they were a different squad in the second half, mainly because you said Grady's stats didn't really show that he took a step back. But watching them in the first half, you could tell that he did take a step back and then elevated himself again late in the season and got back to where he was. So if he can just start off on the right foot this year, they're going to get a whole year of good Kellen Grady. Luke Frampton came on later in the year once he started to get more comfortable. And this is a perfect candidate team for the theory of everybody's back, and that means they should just get better. Because unlike last year's George Mason team that we felt that way about on theory, this team's actually had some good success so far. And they're not very far away from that next big step.
No, Davidson had a good year last year. I mean, they didn't make the tournament, but overall they went 14-4 in the A-10, which most years that would be good enough. And I think Kelvin Grady's injury halfway through the season kind of derailed their year. He missed a couple key games that they lost at the end of the non-conference, and then I think at the beginning of conference play, it took him a little while to get going. I am excited about a couple of their role players that you mentioned. Some well-embedded moles, a.k.a. the Charlotte Observer, informed me that Luke Frampton's bulky knee brace that you might remember from last year, that's coming off. McKillop expects him to be a more physical player. He's going to do more to get to the rim, grab more rebounds. Last year, he was a fantastic shooter, but he was kind of one-dimensional. Although, I think he was the conference leader in three-pointers made. He didn't do a whole lot else, although he's a solid defender. I will give him that. And then another guy I want to mention, Keyshawn Pritchett, kind of an undersized stretch four, but he led the A-10 in three-point percentage during conference play. Not someone you'd think of because he doesn't take a whole lot of shots, but he's just another weapon you have to worry about. I mean, you'd expect to see guys like John Axel and Kelvin Grady. They shoot the ball a lot, so you need to worry about defending them, but if you leave Pritchett open, he can do some damage too.
Yeah, we, especially when we record these pods from separate locations, we don't always compare notes. And so you actually just gave me a perfect lead into the two big things I want to talk about with this team. My X factor, I was actually going to ask, is Luke Frampton too good to be an X factor?
I don't think so. I mean, he didn't even make the A-10 rookie team last year, which was kind of surprising. But I do think there's a good chance for him to take a step forward.
Yeah, so I'm now actually remembering. I had him as the sixth guy on my rookie team and took a lot of heat for it. But yeah, you're right. I'm not necessarily sure he should have made it, but he would have at least been the next guy up. And the big reason why he didn't make it is he just wasn't that impressive to start the year. And he really turned it on later. I think he's got not even another step to go up. I think he has maybe two or three steps to potentially go up. And if Grady's back to full health, and if John Axel is the guy that he's been, they're going to attract the attention of opposing defenses in full. And so Luke Frampton is going to be free to just run around and run off screens and shoot plenty of open threes. And it's basically just the absolute best situation that he can have. So he shot the ball at about 38% from three last year. I actually think given the volume of open shots he should be able to get, that he can get that number above 40. And if that happens, then we're not even talking about best backcourt in the A-10 anymore. We're starting to talk about one of the better perimeter groups in the entire country, because Frampton just gives them this extra level of shooting and dynamism that they really never had for a lot of last season.
Yeah, and I think that's just something you have to worry about all the time when you're playing Davidson. I mean, they have the ability. They always have four guys on the court, at least at all times, that can knock down the three. And then they can score in a variety of ways, though. They have guys that can get to the back at the basket. They set so many back cut screens. And Frampton's one of those guys that he started to do that more at the end of last year. And I just think if he can increase his mobility, too, without that knee brace, that's going to pay a lot of dividends for Davidson. Someone else, though, we need to talk about, their fifth starter, Luka Brajkovic, a 6'10 sophomore. He was really solid at the beginning of last year, kind of caught us all off guard because we just didn't know very much about him. But he averaged 11-6. I think one of the biggest issues with his game is that he was just not very strong in the post. He had trouble guarding some of the better big men in the A-10. Although, according to Bob McKillop, he did put on 28 pounds this year. Hopefully of muscle, but I can't confirm that. But if he can increase his post defense, that's going to be huge for Davidson. Because I know, especially in the Dayton game, they could not hang with Obi Toppin and Josh Cunningham. And I think just that combined with their lack of depth, that was one of their major weaknesses last year. So if they can get more out of Brajkovic defensively, that would be huge. Offensively, I think he's already pretty well polished. I mean, even though he didn't use the brute strength you see from some of the other big men in the conference, he had a lot of finesse around the rim and just being able to score in a lot of different ways. I think offensively, he's already a great post option.
Yeah, my biggest hope for the offseason for Davidson was that Brajkovic was going to put on some mass. And then I started looking around today and saw he was listed at 250.
Yeah.
And there's no way that that's just a typo from last season because he wasn't even close to that number. So if this is real, because the biggest thing with him and the reason why his numbers got so inconsistent at the end of the season is he would play a guy like a Marcus Santos Silva or a Ciryl Langevin, and he would just get bullied and get into horrible foul trouble. He'd sit out for 12 minutes to end the half, and then come back in the second half and just have no rhythm at all. He needs to stay on the court and needs to play through a consistent rotation to be able to do his offensive damage. And so I think that his offense actually starts with better defense.
Yeah, that's a good point. Although I do think one thing we do need to talk about with Davidson, obviously he's not going to be able to stay out there 40 minutes a game. So we're at this point, I mean, it's kind of unclear who's going to be his primary backup. Right now it's looking like either Bates Jones, who stands at 6'8", really didn't play a whole lot last year, averaged less than 1 point a game. And then they have a 6'10 big man, David Christensen. Wasn't able to find too much information about him. If he's someone that can step up, though, and just give them 10 minutes a night, that would be huge. But in general, that's just one of my biggest concerns with Davidson. Outside of Brajkovic, I don't know if they have the size and depth to hang with teams down in the paint.
So that's my weakness for this team, is the lack of big men depth in their interior defense. Christensen, he's only 210 pounds at 6'10". So basically just think Brajkovic last year, but slightly skinnier and about an inch shorter. Hyungjung Lee, he's a bigger guard, but he's under 200 pounds. There's not much in the way of options here, and I think that they really do need a contribution out of Bates Jones. And we can't just assume that it was his play that kept him off the court, since they actually had two decent backup centers last year. And now that they've both graduated, the minutes are there and wide open for Bates Jones to try to seize them. I think they need 15 minutes a game out of him to really, really get Luka to his peak performance.
Yeah, and I did see that Bob McKillop, he wants to play a deeper rotation, and he said last year he didn't get some of his bench guys in the game enough. If he can get just any sort of production out of some of those guys, Jones, Christensen, and then Hyungjung Lee, that would be huge, because the key guys for Davidson, I mean, their best players are better than pretty much every other A-10 team's key guys, but their depth last year was just such an issue. And unlike some of the other A-10 teams like Dayton or Rhode Island, it's harder to say if Davidson did enough to make up for that lack of depth. I don't know if they addressed that problem, and that's something we're going to see pretty early on in the year, if any of these young guys can take that step forward and fill that role of a bench big man.
Yeah, and this is even more critical when you look at who they're competing with at the top this year. Dayton's always a big team. Rhode Island's got like 9 different power forwards. They're like the Knicks. They're just going to have all of these big-bodied, muscly guys to throw next to Langevin. And VCU, we talked about, is there a universe where they could play Santos Silva and Corey Douglas on the court together? Against that lineup, against any of Rhodey's lineups, against a Dayton lineup with, say, like Chase Johnson at the 4 next to Toppin, those are the kind of teams that are really, really going to hurt Davidson. And if they can't be successful against those 3 teams, then they're not going to make the NCAA tournament, plain and simple. So this really is the biggest question mark on the team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about them offensively. With how much shooting they have, they should be fine to score a lot of points. Just defensively, they're going to have to stop teams at the rim. And I think they have a chance to do that, especially if Bratkovich bulked up. But I think it's fair to say that's their biggest question mark. And just one more thing I think we need to talk about. We haven't brought up Carter Collins yet. He was their 6th man last year. Didn't put up huge numbers. He didn't really need to because they had so many other shooters. But he averaged 5 points a game, shot 37% from 3. And McKillop actually said he was one of the most improved players over the offseason. So he won't help their interior defense problem, but if he can just give some of their guards a rest, that could be big. I mean, he's a very capable 6th man, but if he could take just another step forward, that would improve their depth even more.
Yeah, and this team's too good for us to have spent as much time as we did on the weaknesses. My team's strength, pretty obvious, it's their 3-point shooting. They actually led the A-10 in team shooting percentage at 35.4%, which was good for 126th in the country. If you want a stat to define why the A-10 was not that great last year, just look at the fact that they had no teams in the top 125 in 3-point shooting percentage. But they got Grady, John Axel, Frampton, Pritchett, Carter Collins. All of them shot over 35% except for Grady. Luka actually was 5 of 14 from 3. I'm sure we'll see that volume go up a little bit this year as he gets more comfortable from beyond the arc, but that's a decent performance in a small sample size. That 35.4% is going to go up this year as their guys get healthier and more confident, and as Luka becomes more of a presence down low to open up the floor even more. I actually think that they have a chance to elevate themselves into the top 15, top 20 in the country in that category. And we did this with other teams like Rhodey, where it's so easy to just go on and on about their role guys and the guys that we have question marks for. But eventually we need to circle back to John Axel Goodmanson and Kellen Grady. And the biggest reason, we've seen a lot of stars in this conference the last few years surprisingly regress. So is there any chance of that happening to John Axel?
I mean, no, like, I don't think he's going to have a bad season by any means. I do think it's going to be tough for him to replicate the same numbers he had just because he took such a huge step forward from his sophomore to junior years. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him just regress slightly just because he set such a high standard for himself. I still think he's a great player, though. I mean, he's just the ultimate catalyst for this Davidson team. He does everything for them, whether it's scoring, rebounding, playing defense, and passing out assists. Will he be able to keep those numbers up? I don't know about that. But with him and Kelvin Grady, I mean, that is fair. We didn't talk enough about them, although I think a lot of that is just at this point, we all know what they can do, and they're so established. But yeah, I think it's fair to expect both those guys, whether or not they keep the same numbers, I'm not sure, but they're going to be huge factors, and they're two of the top 10 players in this conference at the very least, I would say.
So I actually think that the counting stats will stay about the same for Jon Axel. 17 points a game, 5 assists a game, 7 rebounds a game. I wouldn't be surprised if the rebounds went down slightly. I think the assist numbers are kind of right where they will be, and the scoring could go up slightly. But what I expect to see from him is better efficiency. And that actually starts with Grady, that if he can put together the full strong season that we were talking about, then all of a sudden he takes on a lot of the late in the shot clock pressure. And as we've said with everything else, basically every improvement from Davidson is just going to open up the floor even more. And so the number I'm staring at is 35.3% from three from Jon Axel Goodmanson last year. It feels low just based on the eye test. And I actually think that number is going to go way up this year. I think it's super logical that even with the volume of tough shots he has to take, that that number could get to 38, 39%. So I see him as kind of a similar guy on paper with his top end stats, but I think he has a chance to be a much more efficient player this year. And if Davidson's going to be a top 25 team nationally, that kind of needs to happen.
Yeah, and if those guys improve, the A-10's going to have to watch out because they were both great last year. And it's just, it's so tough when a team has two stars like that. I mean, it's hard enough worrying about one guy like a Marcus Evans or an Obi Toppin. Davidson had two first-teamers last year, which isn't something you see a whole lot in the A-10. And yeah, like you said, they just have so many options. If they can open up the floor, those guys could be even more damaging from three-point range. And it's just so difficult to worry about all those options for Davidson's offense.
We forget that this team's second best player was a potential lottery pick 12 months ago.
Yeah.
And I still remember our preview from last year where we were trying to give the explanation for why he shouldn't be compared to Steph Curry and why guys like Jack Gibbs were better comparisons. Jack Gibbs was the best player in the A-10 for a year. Like this, that was the expectation for Kellen Grady last year. And we don't know if it was regression. We don't know if he just never felt 100% healthy last year. But what I do know is he looked like that guy again at the end of last year. And Jon Axel is now even better than he was when Grady was starting to make that climb up. So it's still, the possibility is still very much there that he could just be the best player in the league this year.
Yeah, no, I think there's a good chance Kelvin Grady has a big improvement. Part of that, the injury, I think that hampered him down the stretch, but also his freshman year when his efficiency numbers were just insane, he was really the third option on that team behind Jon Axel, and then that was Peyton Aldridge's player of the year season. I think now that he has a year under his belt where he's one of the go-to guys, he should be more comfortable in that role. And yeah, I think he's a good candidate to improve his stats, at least efficiency. I mean, 34% from three, that's surprising to me. I think he's going to improve on that for sure. He's just too good of a shooter. And also his size at 6'5", I mean, that's tough to defend. I don't know. I think he usually plays the two for them. That's not easy to defend, and I think there's a good chance that we'll be hearing about him as a potential NBA pick at the end of this season, because there was a good reason for us to talk about that last year. I mean, all the talent's there, it just didn't quite come together.
I just think if you told us last year that Kellen Grady was going to shoot 34% from three, and that I wouldn't even have him on my first team all-conference team at the end of the year, I would have just assumed that he just, like, hurt his leg and missed a month. So this is really weird, and I don't know. I feel like the turnaround is coming, and if I had to predict, I think we're going to see a lot more of the Kellen Grady that we expected to see last year as opposed to the one that we got. But I don't know how confidently I can make that statement.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think he's going to get better, but he does need to prove himself. Last year, I didn't have him on my first team either, which I think, honestly, I was a little bit too tough on him because it did surprise me to see he was Davidson's leading scorer over John Axel. I mean, if he can just improve his efficiency with a high volume, he's going to be so dangerous, and he's got a good shot at being the player of the year. Now we just need to see if he can do that with his increased role with Davidson. So
yeah, and we'll wrap it up on this. You weren't too hard on him. Langevin was better last year. I still don't get why it was Grady over Langevin.
But yeah, that's true. I agree with that. One thing I do want to say on Davidson before we move on. I am happy to say that their non-conference is a lot better. I criticized them a bit for that last year because I didn't think they challenged themselves enough, and I think that cost them a chance at a bid. This year, they open the season against Auburn in a neutral court game. They have games against Nevada, Wake Forest, Loyola Chicago, Vanderbilt, and then Marquette in the Orlando Invitational. So that's a solid schedule for them. Good chance to pick up some decent wins and hopefully build a resume before we get into conference play.
Yep, so let's move along, head up north a little bit to the DMV area and the George Washington Colonials. 9-24 last year. They didn't even win 10 games. And 4-14 in the conference. They really only lose two guys. DJ Williams transferred out after being their leading scorer. That one's going to hurt. And then Terry Nolan Jr., who felt like he was their best guy, but had really a weird season where he would just get benched for entire games at a time. He was coming off the bench certain nights. There would be games where he'd only play like 13 minutes. And while he was super talented, there was something strange going on there. He's at Bradley now. It hurts them from a talent perspective, but I'm not sure how much he really contributed last year.
No, I think that's kind of a Pipkin situation where I think this transfer is going to kind of work out for both parties. I think Nolan was ready to move on. I think he'll be really good at Bradley. That's a solid mid-major that made the tournament last year, and I think he could have success there. But GW, it just seemed like he didn't see eye to eye with the coaching staff, and I think it's fine for them to move on. I mean, they're rebuilding anyway. So I don't – it's a lot of talent that's going out the door, but I don't think having Terry Nolan would turn GW into a 10th-place team instead of a 12th-place team. I mean, it wouldn't make that big of a difference.
Yep, but now with those two gone, the keys get handed over to Justin Mazzola, who, while inconsistent, was pretty good at the end of last season. Ended up finishing the year, surprisingly, at only 9 points a game, but had 117 assists for the full season and was pretty impressive, basically running the offense in the games where Nolan just disappeared.
Yeah, no, I think Mazzola, I mean, his stats, he only shot 27% on threes, which isn't great, and his efficiency in general wasn't very good, although it's tough to have good efficiency on such a bad team. But I just think the fact that he was the only GW player to start every game, I think that's going to be big for them this year, just the fact that they have a point guard that has so much experience playing with this team. So, is he one of the best point guards in this conference? Probably not. Although I do think that experience, and he's only a junior, I think that's going to help out the Colonials a bit.
Yeah, the other guys they get back, Maceo Jack last year transformed himself from a low-minute, strong three-point shooter into a good all-around offensive player who became one of their leaders by the end of the season. Arnaldo Toro comes back after suffering an early season-ending injury. He'll help their interior defense a lot. Arnell Potter, who was another inconsistent guard, but a guy who had some nice moments. And my big X factor for them, Javier Langarica, who I was surprised to see only averaged 5.5 points per game last year to go with 5.3 rebounds. He had some great moments, and I think most specifically back to the Duquesne game where he was going at it one-on-one with Michael Hughes for a lot of the game, ended up finishing the night with 19 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 blocks. And that was the night where I felt like he had kind of arrived into A-10 basketball and was a guy that I kept my eye on for the rest of the season, and he just never had a game like that again. He's a really talented low post scorer. The numbers don't back that up. And he's a really good rebounder, which the numbers do back up. And on a team that doesn't have a ton of offensive talent, I think he's someone who could potentially be a 10-10 guy this year.
Yeah, no, I think with Javier Longarica and then Arnaldo Toro, GW might have won at least a decent front court in the A-10. Especially Toro, his return. He only played 7 games, but he was almost averaging a double-double at the time of his injury. And I think we might forget just how effective he is. Another guy to talk about for GW's front court, they bring in Chase Parr, a 6'9 freshman from the DC area. He was, I think, their highest rated recruit. He's got a versatile game, able to score with his back to the basket, and he's also a decent shooter, so he might be able to stretch the floor. With those three guys, I actually think GW, I don't know how Parr is defensively, but at least those three guys, I think, can score. And that should help them out because their three-point shooting was kind of a disaster last year. If they could have those reliable inside scorers, that could help an offense that was just terrible for most of the season.
Yeah, and GW is filled with a lot of guys that I would want to have on my team. But the problem is they're all guys that I would want to have as my 7th man. Or I it's a little hard on some of them. Like, I wouldn't mind having Justin Mazzulla as a starter, but I would not want to be in a place where all of these guys make up my full rotation. I think they got a lot of really good role players, but there's just nobody to carry this team. I don't know who the number one option is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, they bring back some guys that at least got a lot of minutes, and I think some of them are pretty good, like Maceo Jack, Arnaldo Toro, and Justin Mazzulla. I'd say that's their big three. The problem is they just have no star power at all. I mean, you look at someone like UMass, at least they have Carl Pierre and Keon Clergeau. I feel like those guys are better than anybody GW has. Or St. Joe's, we haven't gotten to them in our preview yet, but they bring back Ryan Daly as a transfer. I just don't think GW is anybody at that level that could make an all-conference team. So while they have a chance to be one of the deeper teams, I just don't know if they have anybody that can carry them when they're having a tough game. And I just don't know if they have someone that can take over.
I think they're one of those teams where we're going to see them fall behind 15-5 a lot. And then once the first wave of subs comes through and both teams are playing 3 bench guys and 2 starters together, we'll see them make a little bit of a comeback and cut the lead down. And then the starters will come back in to end the half and they'll get crushed going into the locker room again. I just think that that's this team. Is they're going to be better than you with their 5th guy and their 6th guy, but your stars are just going to annihilate their stars.
Yeah, I do want to say, though, I was a fan of GW's coaching hire. They brought in Jamie and Christian from Siena, who actually beat GW last year, which is kind of funny. Christian is a coaching disciple of Shaka Smart. He spent 1 year at VCU, actually the year after their Final Four. So he runs a Havoc defense, very aggressive, forcing a lot of turnovers. Offensively, Siena was one of the slowest teams in the country, so I don't know if that's something we'll see that will continue. But I do think he's won both at Siena and Mount St. Mary's. I think that's a good coaching hire for them. Maybe it'll take a little bit of time for him to get his guys to buy into a system and get them playing his brand of basketball. But I think that was a sneaky good hire for GW, and hopefully it works out. Unfortunately, Maurice Joseph did not work out at GW, and I think it was time for a change there.
Yeah, and for any team that's been really as bad as GW has the last 3 or 4 years, I like the hire of just going out and getting a guy who knows how to win. And some of the pushback on Jamie and Christian was that I think people felt that they could have gotten a flashier guy than the head coach of Siena. But I just care about the fact that he's been a successful coach to this point and understands what it takes to win basketball games, because sometimes it really is that simple. And that when you're trying to change the culture of a program, it helps to have a guy who knows how to win.
And honestly, I mean, I don't want to be harsh, but with the state of their program the last couple years, I don't know how much better they could have done. Because Siena is not a bad program itself. I mean, that's had a good history in the last 10, 15 years. They've made some tournaments, so I do think GW, that is a step up for Christian. But, I mean, I don't know how much better they could have done, honestly, hiring a coach. So, hopefully that works out. He's one of a couple new coaches we'll see in the A-10 this year. And I'm interested to see his style, because I'm always down to watch some havoc, that's for sure.
So, for this team, the strengths, as I kind of mentioned earlier, they have a lot of flexibility. They have a lot of guys who are kind of similar talent levels. So a pecking order may not be an issue for the new coach. But then the big weakness is just scoring. I don't know who's going to carry this offensive load. Maceo Jack is their leading returning scorer at 11.5 points a game. But I still see him more as just a great three-point shooter and someone who can get himself to the line occasionally, as opposed to someone who can really become a slasher and start to score 16, 17 points a game. So it's really going to have to be a team effort. And maybe they can get 5 or 6 guys up to the 12-point a game mark, but that's asking for a lot of improvement. And unless they do that, they're probably headed for Wednesday.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Before we move on, just one guy I do want to talk about. GW has 5 incoming freshmen, and one of them is Jameer Nelson Jr., who was originally committed to St. Joe's, backed out once they fired Phil Martelli. I have no idea how good he's going to be, but I'm just excited. Like, the fact that I vaguely remember seeing Jameer Nelson Sr. play in the A-10 on one of the best mid-major college basketball teams we've seen, I'm just excited to see him play. I mean, he wasn't a super highly rated recruit, although he was one of the better high school prospects in the Philadelphia area. And it's cool that he's staying in the A-10. Who knows how many minutes he'll get. I mean, I think Justin Mazzulla is pretty established at point guard, and then they also have a senior in Armel Potter, so the minutes might not be there right away, but just in general, excited to see what he can do, and hopefully he has a bright future.
Yep, so moving along, we're going to head up to New York now with the St. Bonaventure Bonnies. They ended up going 18-16 last year after a horrendous non-conference. 12-6 in the A-10, they made it to the title game and lost to SLU. They lose Courtney Stockard, Ladarian Griffin, and Nelson Caputo to graduation, and they lose Jalen Poyser, who was in and out of the lineup anyway. He transferred to McNeese State. But what matters for this team is that the 3 stud freshmen, Kyle Lofton, Dom Welsh, and Asuna Shunahi, they're all back with plenty of time still left.
I hate to bring up bad memories, but I do think it's so impressive that with how bad St. Bonaventure started the year, the fact that they were a rimmed-out three-pointer away from advancing to the NCAA tournament is just a huge testament to how these guys improved over the course of the year. Yeah, they lose Courtney Stockard, Madarian Griffin, and Nelson Caputo, so that's one of the bigger senior classes that graduated. But I think we can also say they had the best freshman class with the 3 guys you mentioned. I do think depth could be a little bit of an issue just because they're losing so much. But Schmidt doesn't play a deep rotation anyway, And with these talented young guys coming back, there's a chance for St. Bonaventure to be pretty good again.
I think all you need to know about what everyone expects from this trio is to see the fact that they're projected as an undoubted top eight team that some people have as high as fourth or fifth in their projections, when last season they were not good when Ladarian Griffin was out, and they were a downright atrocity when Courtney Stockard was out. And now that's basically just their team now. And beyond these three, there's really not much that we know about them besides the fact that they still have Ikpeazy in his like 11th year of eligibility as their backup center. But yeah, I mean, it's a testament to how good those three were to end last season and how good everyone thinks that they're going to be.
Yeah, it really comes down to the new guys they're bringing in. A couple of the bigger names, Bobby Panutis is a 6'8 transfer from Mount St. Mary's. He shot 49% from three in his only season there. Not great volume, only 33 for 67, but he's a knockdown shooter that they did not really have last year. Couple other guys, they bring in Matt Johnson, a 6'4 junior, who spent 2 years at junior college. He shot 40% from three, so that could be big for them. Couple of their higher-rated freshmen, Robert Carpenter's a 6'8 guy, had offers from a few other A-10 schools like UMass, St. Joe's, and SLU. He's a good shooter, put up 20 points and 10 rebounds at prep school, so he could get some minutes. And then one other guy I want to bring up, not really because of his skill, because I don't know much about it, but I just thought this was funny. Jaron English, a 6'4 sophomore, spent 1 year in junior college on a team that went 31-4, and he was coached by the great Billy Gillespie. So he got some great instruction, I'm sure, and now he's ready to move on to the Division I game. But you're right, I mean, there are so many question marks with these guys. We haven't seen them play ourselves. If they all pan out, this could be a top four team, though. If not, it could be difficult replacing, especially Stockard and Griffin.
Yeah, and I went with Dominic Welch as my X factor for this team. Much of the same reasoning as picking Luke Frampton as Davidson's X factor. I just think he's a guy who finally started to get comfortable as January rolled into February. And at that time, showed us just how good of a player he is. And now if he takes that next step, it truly changes the ceiling of this team. He was a pretty good shooter, 36% from three, only 39% from two and 50% from the foul line. So he's going to have to get a lot better around the rim. Drawing fouls also an issue, only took 24 free throws last year. But he's already a good jump shooter and a very good defender. And so now if he can start to add some slashing into his game and maybe help to replace some of what they lost with Courtney Stockard, then the ceiling really does go up and they are a top four contender. Now, the biggest weakness for them is we just have no idea what to expect from all of their wings besides Welch. There's a lot of talent there, all those guys you just mentioned, but none of them have done it at Bonaventure. So while a big step up from Welch would be great and continued development from Lofton and Ashunahi would be fantastic, unless they get big contributions from at least two newcomers, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Welch is super important to this team. I was very impressed by his defense in the A-10 tournament. And he does need to grow offensively, especially inside the three-point line. But between him and Osuni, who was sixth in the NCAA in blocked shots, I think the Bonnies bring back a very solid defense. And also Ikpeazy, you mentioned, he's probably not going to start, but still, 6'10", he can play some defense inside. If a few of their newcomers can step up too, this could be a good team. And if anybody's going to bring a group of newcomers together, I think one of the best new point guards in this conference, Kyle Lofton, is that guy. I mean, I think just about any other year, he would have been the A-10 player, or freshman of the year. Unfortunately, we also had Obi Toppin last year. But Lofton was so important to St. Bonaventure last year. He basically never came off the floor. And I think he's ready to continue improving. I think he just sees the floor so well. He's a graduate of the Putnam Science Academy, which produced Scoochie Smith. So that helped. That's helpful, I think. But he was on the freshman team last year in the A-10. I think he could take that step forward and maybe be on the first or second team this year.
So this team has really more strengths than anybody else in that kind of 4-9 group. Their shooting is fantastic. Their rim protection with Ashunahi and Akpeezy is fantastic. And they have Mark Schmidt. And this is like an NBA podcast where everybody's trying to preview the Spurs and they just put them into the playoffs and they pick the over wins total for them just because they have Greg Popovich. And it's kind of the same thing for Schmidt. We don't know what to believe for these recruits and these guys who played limited minutes last year, but everything we've seen about his recruiting ability tells us that they're going to be good. And we also need to factor in that at some point they're just going to win 2-3 A-10 games just because he's better than the other coach. And that's what limits their floor, despite the fact that we have no idea what their role guys are going to look like. Even if this thing's a disaster, the fact that they have Schmidt, Lofton, and Ashunahi means there's no way they're finishing lower than 8th.
Yeah, I don't see a Mark Schmidt coach team going under 500. I mean, last year I pretty much wrote them off after I think they were like 4-10 in the non-conference. And then the way they finished the season, they won 7 out of 8 going into the A-10 tournament, and then they almost won the whole thing. I mean, Mark Schmidt just has such a great track record the last 10 years at St. Bonaventure. I don't think you can bet against the guy. And when he brings back one of the best young cores in the conference, there are reasons to be optimistic for this team.
And we won't go too deep into this because there's going to be a moment in this season where it becomes appropriate to do the Mark Schmidt Love Fest podcast. But as I mention all this, I think about how amazing it is that this is really one. The Bonaventure fans are going to get mad about this. And so I want to make sure it's clear that this is not my opinion. I've never been to Olean, so I can't give this opinion. I'm just going off of what people think and say. This is one of the least appealing programs in the country, just given their location and their weather and the fact that they're not a big name. And they were an absolute disgrace before Schmidt took over. And now all of a sudden, we're basically just saying, like, well, it doesn't matter what happens with their new guys. They're going to be a top half of the league team no matter what. And the fact that that's a statement that we're saying in 2019 is just remarkable. And it's the yearly reminder to everyone that Mark Schmidt is one of the 40 best coaches in the country.
I saw a list that came out a couple weeks ago that ranked the coaching jobs in the A-10. And I think it had St. Bonaventure 11th ahead of LaSalle, Fordham, and one other team. That's just so impressive. If St. Bonaventure really is the 11th best coaching job, the fact that he's constantly competing, he won a game in the NCAA tournament a couple years ago, that's just so impressive. And I think you said it best when it limits their floor. There's no way that Mark Schmidt is ever going to coach one of the worst teams in the A-10. He's turned this program around. And I think you said it, his coaching will win them a few games alone. And they have the talent to back it up. I mean, you can't just win with a great coach, but they do bring back some great players too. And you have to give those guys credit.
All right, so heading from upstate New York into the city. I'm sorry, guys, we have to do this. The Fordham Rams coming in off of a 12-20 season where they went 3-15 in the A-10. One of those wins was over Davidson, which just seems even more remarkable months later now. They actually lost less than I thought. Jesse Bunting and David Pekarik graduated. Their only transfer was Nick Honor, which obviously hurts a lot that they lose their best player from last season. But only one guy gone. Most of their rotation comes back. And I got to say, the more I look at this team, the more I realize, like, they're not horrible this year. And for Fordham, that's an accomplishment.
I just got to say, for Fordham, I did my best trying to research this team. And I did my due diligence finding out, like, what to expect from them. It is hard to get information. Like, there's no message boards, there's no news articles. And the fact that Fordham had, like, 9 or 10 different guys start games for them, it's hard to say who is going to step up and be their main contributors this year. I mean, I do think you're right in that they actually bring back quite a few players. It's just that so many of them saw such limited action that it's hard to know who's going to be the guys that will step up and who we're going to see on the court most of the time.
Maybe this is the beginning of the start of some sort of rise for Fordham. I actually saw them come into the national sporting conscience today as Arizona Cardinals running back Chase Edmonds scored 3 rushing touchdowns. And then on NFL primetime, Chris Berman reminded us on every highlight that he went to Fordham.
Wow.
So the Rams actually got some primetime exposure. Oh, who am I kidding? This team, it's Fordham basketball. We can talk ourselves into them jumping up. It's not going to happen. I will say, though, I don't think this is the worst team in the conference. I'm actually not going to put them automatically into 14th. And the big reason is, just like with GW, they have a whole handful of decent guys coming back. Antoine Portley, Jalen Cobb, Chuba Ohams, Ty Perry. You can really find a lot of serviceable players on this roster, which is a rare thing for Fordham.
Just since you mentioned Edmonds for the Cardinals, how bad do you think Fordham would beat UMass in football this year? Because they would definitely be favored, right? I think everybody would be against UMass.
I would assume. All I know about the Fordham... No. Because UMass is an FBS program. All I know about Fordham's football team is that they beat Georgetown in overtime because they talked about it on Tony Kornheiser's podcast.
I think Fordham's actually... I feel like they're a decent FCS school, but I could just be making that up. I know even less about their football than their basketball, which isn't much. But you're right. I mean, some of their guys, Antoine Portley and Jalen Cobb, they both averaged double figures. Jalen Cobb in particular, he was their second best freshman last year. Shot not great, 33% on threes, but I think he's got a good chance to take over and be the leading scorer. One guy I want to point out, Yvonne Rout, a 6'7" junior, he only averaged 4.5 and 2.5 last year, which I was surprised because he's actually one of Fordham's better players as a freshman when he averaged 8.4 points a game. I'm not sure why he had reduced minutes last year, but he's shown the potential to be a quality A-10 player, and I wonder if we'll see more from him this year.
Yeah, another guy that could potentially break out, Ertan Ghazi, who actually played some decent minutes in the Big East his freshman year at DePaul, and then fell out of favor there, came to Fordham, and basically did about nothing last year, played in only 5 games because of injury. He's a guy who could give them something. But my X factor for them is actually Ty Perry, who... 2 games into the season, not the A-10 season, but the actual college football season, looked like the A-10 breakout freshman, not Nick Honor. After Perry was just incredible in their first 2 games, and then he just disappeared onto the bench and only played 14 minutes a night. But unlike the rest of these guys, he's shown us that he's capable of being a guy who can carry the load for them. It's an insanely small sample size, but maybe in his sophomore year, we can see more of that.
Yeah, I mean, he's at least got it in him to have those big games. So Fordham, as always, they bring in a group of newcomers, and usually they have some talented guys that come in for 1 year and then we never hear from them again. Hopefully that's not the case with these guys, but a few I want to talk about. Joel Soriano, a 6'11 freshman, competed with the Dominican national team and had some high major offers. He could have gone to Illinois, South Carolina, or LaSalle. I expect him to play a pretty big role just because of his size, and he was also their highest rated recruit. With him and Chuba Ohams, that's actually got the potential to be a decent front court. Especially Ohams, who I want to mention with him, only averaged 6 points and 6.5 rebounds, which doesn't sound great, but he only played just over 20 minutes a game, so you give him full-time starters minutes, he's flirting with a double-double. With him and Joel Soriano, that's got the chance to be to give some teams problems. The other newcomer I want to talk about is actually a junior who spent 2 years in junior college, Josh Colon, who I think has the chance to be their starting point guard for Nick Honor. He averaged 15 points a game with 4 assists, which are decent numbers, and it seems like he had some decent competition there. I think him and Ty Perry might be the two best candidates to fill that role on Fordham's team.
Yeah, and I think Jalen Cobb's going to be better next year too. He showed a little bit in terms of being able to be the number one guy when Honor had some foul trouble in various games in the A-10 season. I actually like him. I think it's just crazy because the more I talk about this team, the more I think that they're not going to be atrocious. And I don't know. Jalen Cobb could be a very interesting breakout player in this conference next year.
Well, it's hard to say exactly how much preseason rankings, especially the computer-generated ones, it's hard to say how much that matters. But Fordham was actually like the 10th best team when the preseason KenPom rankings came out, which that definitely took me by surprise. I don't know exactly how they come up with those numbers, but I can't imagine that Fordham has been rated that highly in the past couple years. So that's a little bit of reason for optimism. It's just, at the end of the day, this is Fordham, though. It's hard to have very high expectations. I mean, if they can somehow sneak their way out of the bottom four, that would be a huge step in the right direction for them.
So finally, to wrap up today's episode, it is the defending A-10 tournament champs, the St. Louis Billikens, 23-13 last year, 10-8 in conference, and they are one of the two teams that really lost a lot from last season. Javon Best, Tremaine Isabel, DJ Foreman, Dion Wiley, all moved on in graduation. Thankfully for them, they still got Jordan Goodwin, Hassan French, and Fred Thatch coming back to lead what's going to be a very young and very unpredictable team.
Yeah, it's kind of tough to evaluate SLU. They went from being the oldest team in the A-10 to one of the youngest, just like that. That's kind of what we saw happen to Dayton and Rhode Island the last couple years, where they just had a great senior class leave all at once. So I think it's fair to say they could take a step back, but they still have some talent on this team. I think Jordan Goodwin, I think of him kind of as a poor man's John Axel, because he still averaged 10 points and 7 rebounds to go with 3 assists a game. So he does everything for them too. I think his numbers could definitely increase. And then Hassan French is the other key starter that returns. He made it onto the A-10 third team as one of the best post defenders in the conference. If he could elevate his offense a bit, he could be someone to watch out for sure. His biggest issue was shooting. He only shot 49% from the field, which isn't that great for a center that only takes shots 5 feet from the basket and shorter. And then his free throw percentage, I mean, we don't even need to talk about that because everybody knows by now. It's not pretty.
Yeah, Jordan Goodwin, who you mentioned is being kind of close to John Haxel, I can't buy that because his shooting's so bad. 26% from 3, 51% from the foul line. And for some reason, it just like bothers me as a basketball fan that Jordan Goodwin isn't a better shooter. And maybe it's because that's really the only thing missing from his game. He's such a great wing defender. He's a pretty strong playmaker who this year is probably going to have to take on a lot of the point guard duties for them. And other than that, he just looks the part of a really good basketball player. Standing at 6'3", 210 pounds, he's very smooth. I'm just waiting and waiting for that jump shot to come alive. And maybe this is the year, because he's not even a great jump shot, but just a decent jump shot away from being like a second team All A-10 guy.
No, I think you're right. That's why I called him the poor man's John Axel. His shooting for a guard is just not good enough. But if he could be a 35% three-point shooter and a 70% free throw shooter, all of a sudden, I think you're looking at one of the best guards in the conference. And now that they lose Javon Best and Tremaine Izabel, who were their most prolific scorers, he is going to have to shoot the ball more. That might be tough for him to keep up any sort of efficiency, but there's a good chance he's going to be their go-to guy offensively.
He probably will be, and I think the only universe where he isn't is if their stud freshman Terrence Hargrove turns out to be really fantastic. He's got some pretty great highlight tapes if you watch. He's going to be a really fun dunker. I know that our friends over at the House That Rick Built podcast really love him. This is a team that, just like with UMass, they're going to be relying a lot on their freshmen. And Hargrove is going to be one of the more interesting ones.
Yeah, no, that is a great thing about SLU. Although they lose a bunch, they bring in, I'd say up there with UMass, one of the best freshman cores in the conference. Terrence Hargrove, you said it, he's very athletic. He'll have some great highlights. And I think his length, offensively and defensively, will be great for SLU. Another guy I'm interested to see, Yuri Collins, who had offers from Missouri and Iowa. He's only 5'10", so he's a little guy, but I think he's got a chance to be their starting point guard right away if they leave Jordan Goodwin at the two. And one more guy that I think is going to play a big role. He's not a freshman, but a junior college transfer, Javonte Perkins. He's the all-time leading scorer at his school, or former school, Southwestern Illinois College. There he shot 36% from three and also averaged 8 rebounds a game. So maybe he has some versatility there and he can take over for Javon Bess as one of their better scorers and shooters.
Yeah, and for this team, the strength is going to be their defense. Jordan Goodwin is one of the best defenders in this league. Hassan French would be the best defensive big man in basically just about any conference that didn't have Asuna Shunahi in it. And then they have my X factor, Fred Thatch, who early in the year I thought was going to be a good shooting option for them off the bench. And then it turned out that he would end up spending the year shooting 27% from three, a number that I think will go up just because his shot looks a lot better than his numbers. But what I didn't expect to see in A-10 play is that he is really good on defense. And I think it's a testament to Travis Ford, who I think really did some stuff to help him out in practice this year. But those three are the basis of another top three A-10 defense.
I just think the fact that Fred Thatch, as a freshman, got the minutes that he did on the most experienced team, which had four seniors, I think that shows his talent. I think he's a great candidate to break out. He only averaged 4 points and 3 rebounds a game, so that doesn't stand out at all. But he is going to get more minutes this year. I wouldn't be surprised to see him start. And I agree. I think he could be an X factor for this team.
Now, on the flip side, I'm really worried about their offense. I thought that their shooting was a almost Rhode Island level disgrace for most of last season. And it was a reason why I think that I underrated them down the stretch a lot. because Goodwin and French are obviously not great shooting threats. DJ Foreman wasn't. Now, they got really helped out as Isabel and Bess kind of turned it on late in the year and made a lot of tough threes in close games. But now those two guys are gone. And this has the potential to go south really quick from beyond the arc. This is a team that could end up shooting under 30% from deep, unless it turns out that some of these new guys are snipers.
Yeah, and one of the big storylines that we followed last year is that SLU was one of the very worst free throw shooting teams in the entire country. And that might be tough to improve on because they lose Javon Bess and Tremaine Isabel, who were both good shooters. They both shot over 70%. They return five guys, the main ones being Jordan Goodwin, Hassan French, and Fred Thatch. And they also have Casey Hankton and Demarius Jacobs, who didn't get a whole lot of minutes. Their returning guys only combined to shoot 47.6% from the line. So if some of their new guys can't make their free throws, it's going to be even more frustrating for Billikens fans. And I already can't imagine how tough it was to see your team shoot 60% when everyone else is shooting 70 to 75%. It definitely cost them a couple games last year. And that's part of the reason I was surprised to see them win the A-10 tournament. I always knew they had the talent. They were the preseason favorites. But it's just tough to win in a tournament setting when you can't close out games at the line.
Yeah, and I really, really believe that Goodwin's going to pick it up this year in that department. He actually kind of reminds me a little bit of Josh Richardson from the Miami Heat. It's a very similar skill set to where Richardson was at coming out of Tennessee, where he's just this fantastic athlete. He's built to be your small forward, but has the playmaking ability to kind of be the point guard if need be. And the theoretical shot is there. As I mentioned earlier, his shot doesn't look too bad, but the stats just aren't there. And I really, really hope that he spent all summer just shooting foul shots in a gym somewhere, because if he can get himself up to 33% from three, 70% from the foul line, and also start picking up some assists as SLU's new point guard, which I think he should be, then he's actually a player of the year candidate, which seems insane to say. And he is my top breakout player in the A-10 this year. I think that he's going to really carry some of that offensive load for them. And I'm really excited to see who he's going to be this year.
Well, I definitely don't expect SLU to have a good offense by A-10 standards, or by any standards, really. But they lose Bess and Isabel. Somebody's going to have to score for these guys. And I think Goodwin's their best shot. If he can start making some shots from the outside and making shots at the line, I do think he could be an all-conference player, but it's just hard for him to put up big numbers when he shoots the way he has in the past. So I think that's got to be a priority for SLU. They need to improve their shooting in general. Hopefully some of their new guys can help with that too. One guy we didn't talk about, Gibson Jimerson, is a 6'5 freshman. He's supposedly a very good shooter, which could definitely help out the Billikens because they desperately need someone like that. He had offers from Cincinnati and Kansas State, which are two very solid programs. So maybe he's someone that can step in and make some threes, break into their rotation. Outside of him, though, there's no established shooters on this team, which that is something to worry about heading into this year.
Anything else you want to throw in before we wrap up today's episode?
Yeah, I do have one more thing. I actually missed this last year. Do you remember John Axel's brother playing for SLU, Yngwie Goodmanson? Yeah. So it turns out I was actually wondering if we'd see him this year. He left their program last January, and he only played in two games. So he went back to Iceland. He's playing professionally, I guess. Good luck to him. I was hoping we'd see him in a SLU uniform, but I guess not. So that's disappointing. Maybe he could have helped them out.
Yeah, so one error I want to mention before we wrap this up. We didn't talk enough about Kyle Lofton or Asuna Shunahi. I'm not going to feel too bad about that because I'm sure that we will have plenty to discuss with those two as the season goes along. But I just want to make sure that everyone remembers that Ashuna Shunahi might have been the best defensive player in the conference last year as a freshman, and that Kyle Lofton probably would have been A-10 freshman of the year if they did, if this wasn't the same year that Obi Toppin came in. Those two guys are just downright fantastic. And I think that needs to be said, because we keep losing track of some of these star guys during these previews. We should not be losing track of them.
No, that's a good point. I mean, both those guys could make the all-conference team, or one of the all-conference teams. And I think if the Bonnies are going to be good, they will need those guys to continue to step up and play major roles.
So that does it for part two of our A-10 basketball preview. We will be back again next week to wrap up our team previews with the four remaining Midwest teams: Dayton, LaSalle, St. Joe's, and Duquesne. So stick around for that. If you haven't already, please listen to part one of our podcast where we covered VCU, George Mason, Richmond, UMass, and Rhode Island. Leave us a review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, if you want to put anything into our mailbag to ask to answer in a future podcast, just reach out to us on Twitter at @3BidLeaguePod. And thanks for listening.
Denim Brown.